The prophecy given to David, the sword shall not depart from your house, and here we go. And it came to pass after this, that Absalom, now you're not going to like Absalom. We don't know that we don't like him yet, but you, if you're familiar with the story, you're like, no, Adam, we don't like this guy. But at the beginning, I think about motive, and I wonder, you know, did he start out okay? At what point did he go bad, rogue? Was he a bad guy to begin with? I don't know. But here he's the victim. His name, and you would know this, Absalom, Abba Shalom, my father is peace. He's not going to turn into a very peaceful character, though, I'm afraid. Came pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Now, Amnon is the oldest. Absalom is the next oldest. They had another brother in between. Chileab was his name. He was Abigail's son. He's not mentioned anywhere. Presumably, he died, and nobody knows anything more about it than that. So we're introduced to Absalom, and he's got a sister. Well, David has, at this point, what, 10, 11, a bevy of wives. Too many, way too many. And he's got children by ostensibly all of them. So Amnon is not full brother with Absalom. Tamar is. Their brother and sister, they have the same mom and the same dad. So Amnon's not a full brother. He's a half-brother to Tamar, but he loves her. Ew. What are you, some sort of perv? Yes. Adam, now wait a second. In those days, you remember, Abraham was married to his half-sister, Sarah. Well, it's forbidden in Leviticus. Leviticus, think 400 plus years after Abraham, okay? So it's not. And at some point, look, who did Cain marry? His sister. I mean, early there was that for several generations until it kind of, you know, played out a little bit. And we're all married to somebody who's related to us at some point, okay? And the some point is the technical part because, you know, we all got, we all come from Adam and Eve, but then, you know, generations and generations and generations and generations after that, we all got off the boat with Noah. So there is obviously relations, but the close relation is the one that God says, no, that's wrong. And that, because then it's forbidden in Leviticus. And I would look that up, but you believe me, and you can look it up yourself. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her. Well, that's good anyway. But he's still a perv. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab. Now that's a laugh. I hope you don't have any friend named Jonadab. The name's nothing wrong with it. It means Jehovah impels is probably the closest, best way to say it. Like God makes this thing happen, impels. But is he impelling Jonadab to do what Jonadab does? No. God doesn't make anyone sin. He doesn't tempt anyone with evil. He's not tempted by evil. So Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab. Now, if you have a friend who's like Jonadab, unfriend him on Facebook, take him out, take your phone out and take his name out of that or her name out of it if it's a Jonadab S or whatever. You don't need friends like this. But we have them, people who are coaching us to do evil. We don't need them. You know the old and lead us not into temptation. And then the punchline is, I can find it by myself. Well, it's not a punchline so much as we understand how that works in our own life. And we don't need somebody coaching us to help us to do evil. We've got to, you know, so you get saved, right? And you have all these knuckleheaded friends, right? Because that's who we hang out with when we're not Christians. And then some of them, after you're saved, they'll thin themselves out. Some of them are content to hang out with you. And let them. But don't, and if you find yourself waffling or trying to accommodate their sin, you have to get rid of them. That's all there is to it. It's a cancer. Cut it right out of your life. Well, I want to reach them for Christ. I understand. It's very admirable. And if you can do that and maintain righteousness, good. Good. But if you have a Jonadab in your life and he's and you're already a pervert, well, not you, but Amnon's already a pervert. Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, son of Shimeah, David's brother. So they're cousins, right? Jonadab was a very subtle man. Subtle here, read crafty. Not because he had a crafts table at the crafts fair. He was crafty. He was sly. And he said unto him, why art thou, being the king's son, lean from day to day? Wilt thou not tell me? And Amnon said unto him, I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. And by the way, my half-sister. And Jonadab said unto him, lay thee down on the bed. Now, I wonder how long it took for Jonadab to come up with this little enterprise. Probably not long at all, because he's probably already, he's subtle. He's crafty. He's probably always thinking in these terms, how he can gain an angle, get an advantage. Amnon is in line for the throne, okay? That's what we have to remember. After this, even if he doesn't die, he's forfeited. Okay, Jonadab said to him, lay thee down on the bed and make thyself sick. And when thy father cometh to see thee, say unto him, I pray thee, let my sister Tamar come and give me meat and dress the meat in my sight that I may see it and eat at her hand. So Amnon lay down and made himself sick. And when the king was come to see him, Amnon said unto the king, I pray thee, let Tamar, my sister, come and make me a couple of cakes in my sight that I may eat at her hand. I don't know if David's suspicious or not. He should be. Like, we got royal cooks and stuff. What is she like? Okay, what's going on here? Then David sent home to Tamar, saying, go now to thy brother Amnon's house and dress him meat. Cook him some food, right? So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was laid down. She took flour and kneaded it, made cakes in his sight, and did bake the cakes. She took a pan and poured them out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, have out all men from me. And they went out, every man from him. And Amnon said unto Tamar, bring me the meat into the chamber that I may eat of thine hand. Tamar took the cakes which she had made and brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. I wonder if she's kind of suspicious. She's really in a position where her dad, who's the king, told her, and Amnon, who's her brother, who's the king-to-be, is telling her. I'm wondering what kind of rights she has. What kind of, get your own, get away from me, shut up. You know, it's not like women, when you're being pushed into a situation, this is America, push back. And I'm not talking about in some nefarious, godless, horrible way. I'm just talking about you don't have to be taken advantage of. And Tamar is really kind of in a situation where I really feel poorly for her. She's not a bad guy at all. She's just a virgin daughter of the king, hoping to marry well, have a family, and live happily ever after. Right? When David and Bathsheba were fornicating, adulterating, you always wonder about Bathsheba's part. You know, middle of the day, taking a bath on the roof next to the king's house. I don't know. She doesn't look like at any point she was raped. I don't know how else to say it. Tamar's raped. Okay, that's all there is to it. She brought them into the chamber to Amnon, her brother. When she brought them unto him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, come lie with me, my sister. Because he's a perv. And she answered, okay, she's beautiful, but that doesn't give anyone reason to be a perv. She answered, nay, my brother, do not force me. She's saying, don't rape me. For no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly, this stupid sin, this stupidness here and this sin here. And I, whither shall I cause my shame to go? And as for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore I pray thee, speak unto the king for me, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee. Does she want this to happen in a good way? Does she think, okay, if it's going to be, and I'm married to you, or is she just buying time? I don't know. I would say buying time. I would think that she's a godly enough person who's saying, yikes, this is yucky, really gross. What is wrong with you? You know what I mean, but hubby, he would not hearken on her voice, but being stronger than she, that makes my blood boil. Forced her and lay with her. Women are, I almost feel like I have to apologize for all the women who ever lived and were subject to all the men who ever, it's just, it's a wicked, it's a vile, it's punishable by death in Israel and should be. It's not punishable by death in America, and I don't think ever has been and should be. We have this revolving door of justice, you know, a guy's in there for second, third, fourth rape, where he's got a judge who, don't you do that again, or if you do that again, you'll be in front of me, and so help me, I'll say, don't you do that again. And it's just ridiculous, and it's a mockery. It should be, I believe, in my heart of hearts, punishable by death. And it was in Israel, if they're both virgins, they're both not married, he has the option to marry her. He has to. And the dad can say, no way, and probably should. But you're thinking, oh, kids will be kids, and sometimes people lose their head and stuff like this. No means no. I feel very strongly about this. Amnon is put to death by Absalom, and I think rightfully so. There's some subtlety going on there, too. It isn't as manly, as resolved as it should be, but it's, okay, let's just read the story. He forced her and lay with her. Read here, he raped her. Then Amnon hated her exceedingly. When God's not in it, love and hate, or lust and hate, are very close. Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. Amnon said to her, arise, be gone. What a cruel, horrible human being this is. I want to kind of set it up for you. He's going to die, and when he does, do not feel sorry for him. Why does he hate her so much? She was obviously sickened by the whole deal. She wasn't, oh, this is wonderful, you're dreamy. I just think she's screaming, carrying on. She's not. So he sees himself through her of what he has done, but he can't apologize. He's not. She said unto him, there is no cause. Like, he's sending her away, and she said, now what? This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me. But he would not hearken unto her. What, does she want to marry him now? No, I don't think so. But that's all her choice is. You see, in America, we don't put America in general does not put any premium on virginity when you're married. In some circles, they do. We do as a church, and we should, and other churches should, but they don't. And America in general, I've heard of Christian dads when a guy would say to him, "Hey, I'd like to marry your daughter." "Oh, why don't you just live together?" "Yeah, I know, right?" And we teach women here routinely, if he says he loves you and he wants to get you to violate, cross a line, put aside a standard, he doesn't love you, he loves himself, and he's using you. And this happens only every single time. No, you don't understand. My boyfriend, he's an exception. He's an exceptional liar, and he's got you bamboozled, but this gray beard over here, he doesn't have us bamboozled. We've seen it. We understand. He's just a little, a selfish little boy. Men marry. Little boys use. Always, and there are no exceptions to this rule. If I really, 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 really love you, I put you before me. And your virginity and your holiness are more important than my having an itch scratched or whatever. Okay. I have to say this, okay? I just have to say this. So he hates her, he puts her out, and she's ruined. She can't get married now. It's all done. Her life is, for the most part, over. As far as her being a wife and a mom and living happily ever, that's all gone. He wouldn't hearken to her. Then he called his servant that ministered unto him and said, put now this woman. It's not a woman. It's a sister. It's a princess. It's the king's daughter. Put this woman out for me and bolt the door after her. And she had a garment of diverse colors upon her, with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. Then his servant brought her out and bolted the door after her, and Tamar put ashes on her head and rent her garment of diverse colors that was on her and laid her hand on her head and went on crying. Is that sad? It's tragic. Are you mad? Are you angry? I hope you are. And Absalom, her brother, said to her, hath Amnon thy brother been with thee? Guys who are... Absalom knew. How do you know? He's not dumb. He sees how his brother, the perv, is making eyes at his sister. He sees him scoping her out. Absalom said, hath Amnon thy brother been with thee? Behold now thy peace, my sister. He is thy brother. And by the way, he's going to be king. Regard not this thing. Don't let it sink your ship. Don't let it pull you down. Don't let it. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. I think Absalom's doing the right thing. And he's looking to David to see what David's going to do. When David heard all these things, he was very wroth. Well, it's a good first step, but we're going to find out that's David's only step, and it's not enough. What should David have done? Call for the priest, call for Nathan, called in his son. Okay, when I did this, when I was fell into sex sin, this is I repented, and I really, and shared, and okay, there's You know, you're going to have to marry her. That's the only thing. And by the way, you can't be king now. And that's what I would have done. Fixed it best I could. It's hard to put a happy face on horrible sin. And they don't live happily ever after, usually. He's wroth. Good. He's righteous. That's it. Absalom spake on his brother Amnon neither good nor bad. For Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. This can't be a happy house. It came to pass after 2 full years, and it's 2 full years of David doing nothing except got mad. He sent Tamar to Amnon's house. He's got some guilt on his hands. He did not see through the subterfuge. And he brings Amnon, I can't believe you did that to me. I can't believe you used me, you used your sister, you're a horrible human being. What? He's still in line to be the king, looks like to me. Came past after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor, which is beside Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. And sheep shearing is a big deal. It's a celebration time. You get rack of lamb and lamb chops and yum, yum, yum. And oh, you're saying, no, they didn't slaughter. Well, they would slaughter one sheep or something like that. It was party time. It was, you know, you share all the sheep, you sell the wool. It's a big, it's like, you know, when you get the harvest of the barley and then later on the wheat. It's big doings. Absalom came to the king and said, behold, now thy servant hath sheep shears. Let thy king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant. And the king said to Absalom, nay, my son, let us not all now go, lest we be chargeable unto thee. And he pressed him, howbeit he would not go, but blessed him. I'm not going, but look, God bless you. Have a good day. Then said Absalom, if not, I pray, let my brother Amnon go with us. And the king said to him, why should he go with thee? I wonder if he's a little bit suspicious here. Absalom pressed him, and he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. If you won't go, send your, you know, all the others, right? Now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, mark ye now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, when I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not, have not I commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant. Well, he raped your sister, okay. But I'm thinking, why don't you be courageous and valiant? Don't get your servants involved in this. And the servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Now they're his servants, so the guilt is really Absalom's. But I don't think it's guilt at this point. I think it's justice. 2 years. David, you're the king. Make your move. He's still in line for the throne. I think at this point Absalom's saying he shouldn't be king. Guess what? I guess I should. All the king's son arose, and every man got him up upon his mule and fled. Way to ruin a party, right? And it came to pass while they were in the way, the tidings came to David, saying, Absalom has slain all the king's sons, and there's not one of them left. And the king arose and tear his garments and lay on the earth, and all his servants stood by with their clothes rent. Then Jonadab, this guy here, Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, answered and said, let not my lord suppose that they have slain all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon only is dead. For by the appointment of Absalom, this hath been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. Oh, yeah, by the way, at your counsel. But I don't think Jonadab mentions that. So he knew, and he was in on it. And so he's no doubt trying to curry favor with David. Now therefore, let not my lord the king take the thing to heart to think that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon only is dead. But Absalom fled, And the young man that kept the watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there came much people by the way of the hillside behind him. And Jonadab said unto the king, behold, the king's sons come, as thy servant said. So it is. And it came to pass, as soon as he had made end of speaking, that, behold, the king's sons came and lifted up their voice and wept. And the king also and all his servants wept very sore. Because he is a dad at the end of the day. And even though Amnon was a scoundrel, he's still a son. I don't know if you have a son who's a scoundrel. You don't want your kids to die under any circumstances. But Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. That's where his mother was from. Now, David went to war with the Geshurites. Did he wipe them all out? Apparently not. Was the daughter of the king given to David, or did he take her? Hard to say. Stop, we'll be friends here, take, and because there were political alliances and those types of weddings in the day. So he's going to the king of Geshur, and which I think would be his grandfather. His grandfather was the king, and this was probably his son, so it's his uncle probably or something. Who knows? And David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. So it's 5 years now. And the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. So he gets over Amnon's death, and now he's got another son who's missing. And he wants to go, but he doesn't. David is a man after God's own heart, but he's not a perfect man. Okay, we already got him for stretching the truth early on, lying, out and out lying. I'm on a king's mission, you know, and all this stuff. And then he's becomes an adulterer, and then he becomes a murderer. So we all love David, but he's definitely, and he's got a real problem with forgiveness, as we'll see. Let's go as far as we can now. Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. Joab sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman, said to her, I pray thee, feign thyself to be a mourner, and put on now mourning apparel, and anoint not thyself with oil, but be as a woman that hath long time mourned for the dead. And come to the king and speak on this manner unto him. So Joab put the words in her mouth. All this is pretty straightforward. When the woman of Tekoa spake to the king, she fell on her face to the ground, did obeisance, and said, help, O king. And the king said unto her, what aileth thee? And it's not, hey, what's wrong with you? It's like, what's the problem? Is more is what he's saying, right? What aileth thee? I love that, though. And she answered, I am indeed a widow woman, and mine husband is dead. And thy handmaid had two sons, and I think David's already is hurting his heart. This is the mention of the two sons. He had two sons, and they strove together in the field, and there was none to part them, but the one smote the other and slew him. And behold, the whole family is risen against thine handmaid. And they said, deliver him that smote his brother, that we may kill him for the life of his brother whom he slew, and we will destroy the heir also. So they shall quench my coal which is left, and shall not leave to my husband neither name nor remainder upon the earth. You see her plight. Well, it's the hypothetical plight, but you see the story and why Joab gave it to her. The king said unto the woman, go to thy house, and I will give charge concerning thee. And the woman of Tekoa said unto the king, my lord, O king, the iniquity be on me and on my father's house, and the king and his throne be guiltless. What she's saying is, okay, we do have a murder. He can't flee to the city of refuge. It wasn't an accidental death. And you can't out of hand just forgive him his crime. Put the guilt on me. And the king said, whosoever saith aught unto thee, bring him to me, and he shall not touch thee anymore. He's not exactly doing right here. You can't just pardon. Okay, you can in America. We have rules. But you can't just, I don't know if you can or not. Let's say somebody's on death row and they're going to lethal injection tonight at midnight and they're waiting for the last minute reprieve from the governor. I think we can do that. But I don't think you can turn around and say you're innocent. I don't know. Not in Maine, not that we have a death sentence, but. So he's not exactly doing according to the law. Then should see, but he says, you know, there's no sense killing the other guy too. I mean, and he's thinking, no doubt he's thinking about Absalom and thinking about Amnon. Then said she, I pray thee, let the king remember the Lord thy God, that thou wouldst not suffer the revenges of blood to destroy anymore, lest they destroy my son. He said, as the Lord liveth. Now he takes an oath. It's a hypothetical story, but it's a real oath. As the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of thy son fall to the earth. Then the woman said, let thy handmaid, I pray thee, speak one word unto my lord the king. And he said, say on. Then the woman said, wherefore then hast thou thought such a thing against the people of God? For the king doth speak this thing as one which is faulty. She's saying hypocritical, unfair, in that the king doth not fetch home again his banished. Oh, for we must needs die, and are as water spilt on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Neither doth God respect any person, not even you, O king. This is almost like a New Testament perspective that this lady has. King's above the law. He's the king. He makes the law. No, she's saying, God makes the law. And you got to, God doesn't respect any person. Yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from him. That's the gospel of Jesus Christ in the Old Testament, y'all. God devises means that his banished, me, you, be not expelled from him. You should know that more than anyone, David. Now, therefore, that I am come to speak of this thing unto my lord the king, it is because the people have made me afraid. And thy handmaid said, I will now speak unto the king. It may be the king will perform the request of his handmaid. For the king will hear to deliver his handmaid out of the hand of the man that would destroy me and my son together out of the inheritance of God. Then thy handmaid said, the word of the Lord, the king, the word of my lord the king shall now be comfortable. For as an angel of God, so is my lord the king to discern good and bad. Therefore the Lord thy God will be with thee. Then the king answered, okay, it's about time he figures it out. Then the king answered and said unto the woman, hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask of thee. And the woman said, let my lord the king now speak. And the king said, is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this? And the woman answered and said, as thy soul liveth, my lord the king, none can turn to the right hand or the left from aught that my lord the king hath spoken. For thy servant Joab, he bade me, and he put all these words in the mouth of thine handmaid. To fetch about this form of speech hath thy servant Joab done this thing. And my lord is wise according to the wisdom of an angel of God to know all things that are in the earth. She's buttering him up and she's thinking, I'm in trouble now. But she's not. David realizes that he has been remiss in his duties, to say the least. And the king said unto Joab, behold now, I have done this thing. Go therefore, bring the young man Absalom again. And Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. And Joab said, today thy servant knoweth that I had found grace in thy sight, my lord, O king, and that the king hath fulfilled the request of his servant. He couldn't just go in and ask him. He had to play this elaborate ruse. No doubt he got the idea of Nathan with the sheep and the traveler and all that. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, let him turn to his own house and let him not see my face. What's the thought process here? So it's kind of forgiveness or it's not. I think David's having a problem with forgiveness. He shouldn't. I haven't really had a huge problem with forgiveness in my life. Why? Because I've been forgiven. So when God forgives me, I can turn around and say to somebody else, psh, no, I ain't forgiving you. How is that okay in anybody's world? How is that okay in anybody's world? If God hadn't forgiven me anything, maybe I'd say, hey, no, you stabbed me in the back. You forget about it. I'm not forgiving you. If you come crawling to me, we'll see. But maybe you could stop being a little bit like that. But after having been forgiven of God, you can turn around and withhold forgiveness from somebody. How do you do that? Can somebody explain that to me? Adam, you know what they've done. I'm sure I don't. I'm sure they don't deserve your forgiveness. I'm sure they don't. I'm sure of it. Neither did you deserve God's forgiveness. I'm sure I don't deserve for God's forgiveness. And the thing they did to you is really hateable. If you're holding on, you're struggling to forgive. Of course it was detestable. Of course it was. I'm giving you every benefit of every doubt. And you have to forgive them. I know it's hard. It's not. It's a faith. And the feelings will catch up. And if they never do, that's fine. Okay? But David has a real problem here. And I think of all the things he's done, this is one of the hardest for me to get over. Let him turn his oars. Let him not see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. But in all Israel, there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. Okay, he's a really good-looking guy. So was David. From the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. When he polled his head, that's cut his hair, for it was at every year's end that he polled it, because the hair was heavy on him. Therefore he polled it. He weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels after the king's weight. How much, you have a note of that? What that is? 6 pounds. 5 pounds is enough, 6 is fine, and it's not exact, so it could be 5 as well as 6. It's a lot. Who weighs his hair after he cuts it? Who does that, right? And unto Absalom there were born 3 sons and 1 daughter whose name was Tamar. So he has his tenderness toward his sister. She was a woman of fair countenance. So Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem and saw not the king's face. Therefore Absalom sent for Joab to have sent him to the king, but he would not come to him. When he sent again the second time, he would not come. Therefore he said unto his servant, see, Joab's field is near mine, and he hath barley there. Go and set it on fire. So Absalom's servant set the field on fire. And Joab arose and came to Absalom into his house and said unto him, wherefore have thy servant set my field on fire? And Absalom answered Joab, because I sent unto thee, saying, come hither, that I may send thee to the king, to say, wherefore am I come from Geshur? By the way, do you hear me now? I called you twice. It was a busy signal both times, so I had to get your attention, all right? I guess it worked, right? Wherefore am I come from Geshur? If it had been good for me to have been there still, now therefore let me see the king's face. If there be any iniquity in me, let him kill me. There is iniquity in him. I mean, he did kill him. I mean, and there was some subterfuge, and can he go to the city of refuge? Well, no, it was premeditated, but it was premeditated in a way like if you're in a firing squad or you're the guy who flips the switch on the electric chair, I don't think you're guilty before God if that's your job, it's your function. If the person been found guilty by a court of law and that's playing itself out, if you're the guy who actually flips the switch or hooks up the electrodes or jabs them with the lethal injection, I don't think you're guilty of anything. But it's not like, if there be an iniquity in me, let him kill me. At this point, I think our boy Absalom is already, he's saying I'm guiltless, but he's also, I think he's crafting a plan. He wants David's okay, and he wants his imprimatur. He's going to try to turn the hearts of Israel toward him instead of David. As we'll see next year, it's really ugly. But the point is, if he's like on the outs with David, he's never going to gain any purchase as far as getting everyone else to follow him. Joab came to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. So it's his, okay, you're back, everything's... I don't think he ever forgave him, though. And then the way it is with Absalom, I don't think he's in a forgivable place. I think he's in a place of treason and treachery, and Joab doesn't forgive him. Some of you know the end of the story. So this is the boy. David's thinking, boy, if I only went when the kings go out to war, if I only was leading their procession, none of this would be. You can choose to sin, but as we say, choose to sin, choose to suffer. You can't control where the results of your sin go. You can't do it. And when I tell you not to sin, because I love you, and because I don't want to see really bad things happen in your life, you say, well, you know, I've sinned before, and I just said to God, I'm sorry, and he forgave me, and that was pretty much it. Well, it really depends on the sin, doesn't it? And so he's faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. And sometimes it's just you and him behind a woodshed, and he's not trying to rub your nose in or publicly humiliate you. If you stay humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, he'll lift you up. But if you stay proud in the sight of the Lord, he knows how to humiliate. He knows how to humble. And what does he use? Humiliation. It's a good story. It's not a fun story, though, is it? But it's instructive.